Well, thanks very much, Chris. I suppose some of you were thinking you wouldn't actually be here today, so I suppose you're reasonably happy that you've actually got a job in this industry still. What I'm going to talk about is, the topic of my talk is wither securitisation. So for those of you listening at home, you're going to miss out on a bit of a visual for the next little bit. But so let me point out that there's a very important H in the topic of this speech. So there's without the first H there, then you could be I could also be saying wither securitisation. So despite its current travails, I don't expect securitisation to wither without an H and die on the vine. Rather, the question I'm posing today is what role will securitisation play in financial markets going forward? Hence, wither with two H's, securitisation. So my answer to the question is that the future is looking brighter for securitisation than it was a year ago, although that's fairly easy to say. But I would not expect a return to the heady days of earlier this decade. So before addressing the question of where the securitisation market's going and what role do I see it playing in the markets in the future, it's useful to recount how we got to this point. So this is roughly what I'm going to run through. First of all, I'm going to talk about the way we were, which is back in early 2007. Then I'm going to talk about the collateral damage, in all senses of the word, that securitisation suffered over the last couple of years, and particularly talk about the damage to the brand of securitisation and talk about the difference between Australia and the US. Then have a look at where we are right at the moment, talk about a bit about what we've been doing in the securitisation world, and then talk about where I see the market going. So this, what I've shown here is where the market was in June 2007 and then where it is roughly today, which is actually up into including, I think we've even got yesterday's issue in there. So in June 2007, just prior to the onset of the crisis, asset-backed securities accounted for about 30% of the Australian bond market, around $280 billion worth of securities on issue. The market had experienced very rapid growth of nearly 30% per annum since the beginning of the decade, considerably faster than any other part of the Australian bond market. RMBS comprised the majority of Australian asset-backed securities, accounting for over 60% of the stock outstanding. So the rapid growth in securitisation, as you all know, reflected the strong demand for housing finance. Although that's not the full story, as the stock of securitised housing loans grew considerably faster than the pace of aggregate household credit growth. So the share of housing loans funded through securitisation actually went from 10% in the late 90s to a peak of almost 25% in mid-2007. And as you can see, we're basically back to where we were in the mid-90s again. So in large part, the growth of securitisation reflected the change in the composition of lenders in the mortgage market following the entry of mortgage originators who relied predominantly on securitisation for funding. So mortgage originators accounted for around, so a breakup, this graph shows you the breakup of the issuance between the major banks, which is the dark blue bit at the bottom, the regional banks, which are the red, and credit unions and building societies are in the purple, and then the mortgage originators are the light blue at the top. So you can see that the mortgage originators accounted for a large chunk of the issuance in the market. In fact, around 35% of total RMB issuance prior to 2007. The banks themselves obviously used securitisation as a funding source whenever it was cost effective to do so. And in the case of the smaller regional banks and the building society, securitisation was an important source of funding. In fact, regional banks accounted for roughly 40% of RMBS issuance, compared to the major banks accounting for 20%, despite their market share in the mortgage market being pretty much exactly the opposite way around. Demand from domestic and non-resident investors for RMBS was very strong in the years leading up to the credit turmoil, supporting the robust growth in the market. But, and importantly, at least one-third of the investors in Australian RMBS were offshore structured investment vehicles. So the now notorious SIVs accounted for around one-third of the demand for RMBS. These entities, as you probably all know now, funded themselves with short-dated paper, less than 365 days, importantly, less than 365 days, to purchase longer-dated assets such as RMBS, in large part to arbitrage capital rules. They were, in theory at least, off-balance sheet vehicles backstopped by credit lines from their parent financial institutions. So we now turn to what happened around the middle of 2007. There was a widespread reappraisal of the risks associated with investing in structured credit products. Securitisations started to suffer severe brand damage as primarily US RMBS incurred significant credit problems as delinquency rates began to rise. So as you can see there, sometime around about March-ish in 2007, you started to see that kick up in delinquency rates. So initially the problem was most evident in the subprime mortgage market. So that's the purple line at the top there. And you can start to see the rapid rise through the first part of 2007. The delinquency rate in the prime market actually didn't start to rise significantly until a bit later. But as this graph shows, the delinquency rate in the prime mortgage space in the US has also risen considerably. So that's extremely high by historical standards for both prime in the prime market as well as in the subprime market. So combined with the decline in house prices, and as you can see on the right-hand side, the increase in foreclosures, which has exacerbated that decline in house prices, those delinquency rates have translated into sizable losses for investors in US RMBS. That damage from those declining house prices and the rising delinquency rate was further exacerbated by the opaqueness of many of the complicated security structures. This was particularly true in the case of CDOs of various powers, by which I mean squared, cubed, whatever, which sliced and diced the underlying mortgages until they were basically unrecognisable. The combination of those factors has seen enormous losses incurred by US and Euro area banks from their holdings of mortgage-backed securities. These losses have occurred despite the fact that securitisation was supposed to get these assets off bank balance sheets. They ended up back on the books of these institutions in some parts because their asset management arms were buying back the securities that their securitisers were selling without anyone actually realising that, but also in large part because the banks had to bail out their sieves and bring the assets back onto the balance sheet. That's the US story. The Australian RMBS market was tarred with the same brush as the US. Despite the absence of these issues of transparency, despite the absence of overly complex structures, and despite their continued strong performance. So as Andre Agassi used to say, image is everything. I was going to use another line there, but I've decided in the interest of good taste I won't. And the image of securitisation was, and to a large extent still is, very much on the nose. And I'll come back to that a bit later. So issuance of RMBS in Australia dried up as it did around the world as demand fell away. Investors felt they were already too full of structured products and had no appetite for any more. Spreads in the secondary market widened considerably. Indeed, at times there basically wasn't a secondary market, with plenty of sellers but no buyers at any price. The oversupply in Australia in the secondary market was exacerbated by the forced liquidation of the portfolios of the offshore sieves as they basically went under. Australian RMBS were sold not because of any intrinsic problem with them, but because the sieves were no longer able to fund themselves. So Australian RMBS suffered collateral damage, even though on a number of fronts the actual collateral in the RMBS was perfectly fine and wasn't damaged at all and remained sound. In the Australian market, there were some new issues during the first, through the second half of 2007 at the early stages of the financial crisis, but the market came to a complete halt last year. Reflecting these developments, the government announced a support program for the industry, as you all know, where it would purchase up to $8 billion worth of new issues through the AOFM, and as you're all aware, that program has basically all but been completed in the last couple of weeks. So let me talk a bit about the quality of Australian RMBS. So the lack of new issuance and elevated in spreads in the secondary market, as I just said, did not reflect any concerns about the credit quality of Australian RMBS. Unlike in the US, the credit quality of RMBS here has remained at the highest level throughout the financial crisis. So if I can show you some figures on non-performing loans, and compare Australia with particularly the US and the UK, and I've put Spain in there as well, And you can see Australia down there in the light blue at the bottom with basically very little deterioration in the performance of the housing loan book, particularly compared to the US, most obviously, but also the UK and Spain. So this highlights the fact that the non-performing share of Australian housing loans at less than 1% is extremely low. Over the year, the arrears rate for over the past year, the arrears rate for Australian RMBS has actually been declining slightly, not increasing. The continuing strong performance of Australian RMBS reflects both the quality and the composition of the types of loans securitised and has been underpinned most obviously by the strength of the Australian economy, particularly the relatively low unemployment rate, robust household income growth, as well as low interest rates. The underlying sound condition of Australian household balance sheets has helped limit the incidence of household financial difficulties throughout the economic downturn. Importantly, the bulk of Australian RMBS are backed by prime loans, so loans made to borrowers that satisfy financial institutions' standard lending criteria. There is no difference between a loan in an Australian RMBS and a loan sitting on the book of an Australian bank. Prime loans make up 97% of the Australian RMBS market. Even when you come down to non-conforming loans here, which are the closest equivalent to subprime loans in the US, they were being provided to borrowers who did not satisfy the standard lending criteria of mainstream lenders, but and were generally provided by a few specialist non-deposit-taking lenders. The difference between the non-conforming market here and the subprime market in the US is still stark. In the US, the subprime loans were provided by a wide range of financial institutions. They weren't provided by the fringe. They're actually provided by the mainstream, just as much as the fringe. Non-conforming loans make up only 3% of Australian RMBS, compared to around 10% of US mortgages outstanding. The arrears rate on Australian non-conforming loans is higher than the less than 1% I'm showing here for the overall book. It's around 8% currently, though it too has actually been declining over the course of this year and is significantly below the arrears rate on subprime loans in the US, which stands around 25% at the moment and rising. Moreover, the higher spread charged on non-conforming loans here is more than enough to compensate for the higher loss rate. As well as the difference in current economic conditions, the lower arrears rate on Australian non-conforming loans compared to US subprime loans also reflects differences in the loan's structural features prior to the financial crisis. I made some comments about this in an earlier speech, but let me just reiterate a couple of these points. Australian non-conforming loans had a much less risky structure than US subprime loans, evident in considerably lower loan-to-valuation ratios. They did not usually feature low introductory rates, the so-called teaser rates, or higher risk repayment options such as negative amortisation periods that were common in US subprime loans. Australian lenders typically retained and still continue to retain the lowest rated tranches of their RMBS or place them with closely associated entities. Moreover, a loan issued in Australia is still closely associated with the originator. There wasn't this originate and distribute mentality in Australia. If a loan goes bad, everyone blames the originator and they know who it is. It's not some anonymous mortgage broker out in the suburbs somewhere, by and large. The Australian legal system also gives a lender recourse to order the borrower's assets in addition to the house in the event of default, which provides the borrower with a stronger incentive to repay their loan. As you're all probably aware, Australians will give up anything before they start defaulting on their housing loan, potentially including food. Reflecting continued strong performance of Australian RMBS, very few structures have had downgrades to their AAA rated tranches. So consequently, the bulk of the Australian securitisation market continues to be extremely highly rated, AAA rated. So let me now turn to where we are at the moment. In recent months, conditions in the Australian securitisation market have improved markedly. For the first time in over a year, there were successful issues of RMBS without the support of the AOFM, as well as several non-RMBS securitisations. So the little blue bars on the end there, which, as I said, includes ME's deal yesterday. Around $2.25 billion were issued through the three RMBS deals, which were put out by Members Equity, or ME Bank, that were not sponsored by the AOFM, as well as $2 billion of securitisation of agricultural and construction equipment leases, auto loans and the like, including the deal yesterday. The increase in private investor demand is also noticeable in the investor participation in the most recent AOFM deal. So that red line there at the end shows you the share of issuance purchased by the AOFM deal. In the most recent deal it did, its share was only 40% of the deal, down from about 80% in the earlier deals. Many of those recent deals have also been well oversubscribed and upsized from their initial guidance. And if we turn to pricing, it also suggests conditions are improved. So I show you the light blue line there is our assessment of where the secondary market spreads are. The sort of purpley blue line is our assessment of the break-even cost of securitisation. And then the yellow dots are the AOFM deals and the red dots are the recent deals we've seen in the primary market. So to give you that gives an indication that the secondary market spread has pretty much come down to close to where we think break-even is, and the recent deals have been pricing around about the break-even level. So the decline, particularly in the secondary market spread, indicates that the market, I think, has worked through much of the oversupply in the secondary market, most of which was created by the unwinding of the sieves. So the narrow margin between primary and secondary markets, as well as the ongoing amortisation of the existing stock, suggests that a more broadly based pickup in the securitised issuance may not be too far off. We've seen those three deals in the last few weeks. There's at least one other deal in the pipeline at the moment of reasonable size. And the other reason, I think, which is giving life to the market, is the fact that the stock outstanding of RMBS has declined significantly. The amortisation rate on Australian RMBS has not declined at all throughout the crisis. In fact, if anything, it's picked up slightly, still running at about 20% per annum. So given the very little issuance that we've seen over the past couple of years and that high amortisation rate, the stock outstanding has declined by more than 40% from its peak. So that decline in the stock should be starting to create some holes in people's portfolios by now. And Moreover, you can actually see that the decline in the offshore stock has been even larger than it has been in the onshore stock. So again, that's indication that the sort of amount of supply to come potentially back onto the market as people unwind portfolios offshore is probably by and large, again, supports the case that it's by and large run its course. Let me now just turn to what we've been up to in the RMBS market. So in October 2007, shortly after the onset of the turmoil, we expanded the range of securities we're willing to hold in our repo agreements to include both RMBS and asset-backed paper. As with other private securities we're initially only willing to accept these securities from unrelated parties or from a third party. So Bendigo Bank can't bring in its own RMBS, it has to bring in a Commonwealth RMBS. But around the peak of the financial crisis in October 2008, we relaxed the restriction on relatedness of both RMBS and asset-backed paper to expand the range of funding options available for financial institutions. So in the subsequent months, we purchased significant volumes of so-called self-securitisations or internal securitisations under repo, with our holdings of RMBS peaking at around $45 billion around the end of last year. 12 months down the track from when we started doing this. So most financial institutions in Australia have considerably better access to term funding in domestic and offshore markets. Consequently, the need for institutions to fund themselves using internal securitisations and mortgages has largely passed. So the bank, nevertheless, we still intend to maintain the broader range of securities that we do accept in our market operations, that is internal RMBS and RMBS more generally, will remain eligible collateral. And just to reiterate that point for the benefit of the rating agencies, we are not going to wind back the pool of eligible collateral. However, with the improvement in funding conditions, we generally no longer expect or wish to see internal securitisations offered as a collateral in our open market operations on a regular basis. Given that many of these repos we put on were a bit over a year ago, you can see there at the end that our holdings of related RMBS have shrunk considerably in recent months as these repos have matured. In fact, we're holding about less than half of what we held at the end of last year. And these repos, the rest of them are going to roll off between now and the end of the year. Let me just touch, actually what I won't touch on is policy issues, because my colleague from ASIC, Greg Megcraft, will talk about much of those issues later on today, so I'll skip that in the interest of time. So let me finally come to the question that I asked at the beginning, which is where the hell is the market going with a securitisation with two H's? So having described where we are at the moment and how we got here, let me answer that question. In general, I think securitisation will be an important part of the financial landscape in the future. Prior to the crisis, many commentators sung the praises of securitisation as a useful means of dispensing risk around the financial system. And in principle, I think they were right. There were, however, as was very clear, major shortcomings in the implementation of securitisation, which meant that dispersion of risk just did not occur. While I expect securitisation to make a solid return, I don't expect it to be as large a part of the market as it was in 2007. In part, that's because demand for RMBS in 2007 was artificially boosted by the demand from those structured investment vehicles, which are just not there anymore. So if you think the market's going back to where it was in 2007, I think you're probably kidding yourself. I've said in a speech before there are a lot of similarities between securitisation and junk bonds, despite them being very different, obviously, in credit quality. Both are important financial institutions that were well-founded. Both grew too rapidly in too fast a time and expanded into areas they shouldn't have and were bought by investors who just shouldn't have bought them. Both played important roles, obviously, in generating subsequent financial dislocation, although securitisation's done a better job on that than junk bonds did. Surprising. Just as junk bonds are now a regular but smaller part of the financial landscape, I believe securitisation will play a similar role in the future. However, as with junk bonds, much needs to be done. As with junk bonds back in the 80s, now much needs to be done to restore the brand name of securitisation. Some of this will only come with the passage of time. However, there are steps that I think can be taken to hasten the process. And one thing which could be taken to hasten the process is to throw the Michael Milkins of the securitisation industry in jail. Although it's interesting to know that the two guys from Bear Stearns got off their charges yesterday, so perhaps that won't actually happen. That might actually help the brand name if some people actually do some serious jail time, but I'm not suggesting that in this country. But one thing which I think can happen in this country is that, not because there wasn't anything like that sort of behaviour here amongst, importantly, but the message that I think particularly people in this room have got to get out there is that Australian RMBS have been and continue to be a strongly performing asset. That message just needs to be continually reinforced. The differentiation between Australian RMBS and US RMBS needs to be continually highlighted. Now, there's not much point necessarily in telling all of you guys that, because you all probably know that. But the message doesn't necessarily even need to be delivered to portfolio managers. It probably needs to be delivered to superannuation trustees whose views may be affected by continual media exposure to the US experience that securitised assets are excessively risky. They basically have this idea that securitisation equals bad. And we've got to just work on changing that mindset. The Australian industry needs to differentiate its product from the US brand. Secondly, securitised products should not be made out to be what they are not. I do not believe they should ever have been part of enhanced cash portfolios. These products are just not cash. They're not where I believe such products should be located in an investor's portfolio. Nor should the liquidity characteristics of RMBS be oversold. By their very nature, RMBS are most suited to buy and hold investors. These investors should be relatively unconcerned about the need to liquefy their investment, nor be overly worried about a temporary widening in spreads or a fall in the price, so long as the underlying asset continues to perform, as it has done in Australia. By and large, I think there is only so much that can be done to standardise the product, although what can be done and what the ASF is encouraging people to do is certainly worth doing. Yes, there are a minimum set of characteristics that it makes sense for RMBS to possess, but ultimately there will remain differences depending on the originator, the exact composition of the portfolio that backs the security, which means that one RMBS is not completely interchangeable for another. Hence, it's difficult to say, for instance, that there is one secondary market price for an RMBS the way one can do so for a government security. As I mentioned earlier, given the speed of amortisation of RMBS, the stock outstanding has declined by over 40% from its peak. As I said, this should be creating holes in investors' portfolios, notwithstanding the permanent absence of some of those former buyers. With spreads continuing to narrow, some investors may also be getting concerned at the beginning they're going to miss the boat and be looking to come back into the market. Hence, I believe there are good reasons to believe that the signs of life that we've seen in the market in recent months indicate more activity to come in the future. But I think an important message for everyone in this room is that the image of Australian securitisation has got to be restored because it was damaged through no fault of its own. But I think that's an important message to get out there, that the Australian securitised products, Australian RMBS, remains, or has been and remains, a quality product. So let me finish there.
Hello, Guy. Kai Chowcott from the Sky News Business Channel. When you say that you see the securitisation market playing a similar role to junk bonds in the US, is that essentially saying that you see the share of the market being similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, what I mean is junk bonds were a much larger share of the market back in the late 80s than they are now. They've now settled down to be a fairly regular part of the market. I'm not saying that securitisation will end up being whatever percent of the market the junk bonds are now, but just they're an accepted part of the financial landscape. They grew too fast, they then shrank through the early 90s, and now they're sort of settled down, and as I said, an accepted part of the landscape. That's basically the way I see securitisation going in the future. It's not going to be 25-30% of the market necessarily anytime soon, but it's also not going to be 0% of the market like it's been over the last couple of years.
Guy, it's Rebecca Hyam from ABC Radio News. Given the extensive liaison program that the Reserve Bank has, and that there are always pockets of problems in the economy, would you describe the recovery that we're having as fragile?
I'm not sure that has much to do with the topic I'm talking about today. So I'm not sure I'm necessarily going to, I don't think I will necessarily answer that. I really would like to answer questions about securitisation rather than about the economy. I mean, the economy is relevant for securitisation in the sense that it affects the performance of the mortgage portfolio, but by and large, I expect the performance of the mortgage portfolio in Australia to continue along the track it's going on at the moment, which, as I said, is actually looking at declining arrears rates rather than rising arrears rates like we're looking in pretty much every other part of the world.